Consider this. 100% of owners will leave their business one day, but few are prepared. Are you? Don't worry, you're in the right place with this podcast, Succession Stories. Host Lori Barkman, the business transition Sherpa, guides you from transition to transaction, from building value in your business to letting go. Lori is a business transition and M&A advisor, specializing in growth, acquisitions, and selling owner-led companies. She's also the author of the Business Transition Handbook. Get your copy and learn how to avoid succession pitfalls and create valuable exit options. Sign up for a business transition newsletter at successionstories.com. Show us the love by subscribing to the show and posting a review. We appreciate you. Now, here's this week's Succession Stories with Lori Barkman.
Welcome back to the Succession Stories podcast. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe. And if you enjoy the show, why not leave us a review? Go to ratethispodcast.com/successionstories. I'm thrilled to have Max Lewis share what led to the eventual sale of his company for $37 million. From selling mangoes as a child to amassing millions by exchanging propane tanks, Max Lewis beat the odds and became one of America's ultra-high net worth individuals by age 36. Through persistence, hard work, and a willingness to learn from mistakes, he tactfully planned for nothing less than success. It's also about a family and business that fell apart as a family business. For 18 months, Max was literally locked out of his business by his brother. Max's story is about forgiveness, resilience, and the power of faith. There are lots of pivotal moments in our lives. Which ones will stand out to transform your entrepreneurial journey? Max's message is that extraordinary success is within your reach when you're willing to put in the work. Enjoy this Succession Stories episode about discovering the secrets behind a $37 million exit with Max Lewis. Max Lewis, welcome to Succession Stories. I am so excited to be with you and reunited with you because we met recently, and it's always best when friends come together on Zoom, don't you think?
Agreed. Great seat. You look great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed reading your book. And of course, meeting the author is always special. And you sent me this amazing. So remember, anyone watching on YouTube is going to see this beautiful gold box. And the title of the book is Who is Max Lewis? Why did you write the book and why did you call it that?
Okay, so it's interesting because a lot of people assume that I had like this goal of writing a book and it was like a bucket list item, but it actually wasn't. I wrote the book because a lot of people kept suggesting that I write a book about my journey. And that's a simple truth. You know, a lot of friends and family, they knew about my story. And sometimes when I would, you know, just tell them like what happened, they'd say, man, you know, you should really write a book. You should really write a book. And then after hearing that about a dozen times, I was in the middle of COVID. And I said, well, I'm really bored. Well, I guess I should write a book. And I started writing the book. And quickly, maybe about, I don't know, maybe like five chapters in, I started to feel like, man, you know, I really want to give back and teach people. And that's kind of where it shifted. So it was a good idea to write the book.
And I think the positioning it as a question of who is the author, who of course is you. But I think thematically what you're getting at with the chapters and how you led, and we'll talk about it, of course, which is 37 chapters, 37 lessons, and the big reveal of $37 million. So let's start at the beginning. Tell me about your family business, which I'll call family in business, if that's a good description.
So the family business, and by the way, real quick, the name, who is Max Lewis, the name Max Lewis, the reason I use that pseudonym, there's many parts to it, but mainly I didn't want the book to be about me. I wanted it to be about the reader. I wanted the reader to have takeaways and not make it about the author. So anyway, sorry about that.
No, that's great. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So the family business, what would you like to know about the family business?
There was a dynamic. So your father had a business and yeah. your brother was a part of it. And then you were part of it. So maybe share a little bit about that background.
Okay. So my father had a propane station where he refilled barbecue tanks. And he also delivered some propane to homes and trailer parks and small restaurants. He had just started his business. He actually got his two delivery trucks that he owned at that time. He got them for free. A friend of his gave them to him so he could start his company. My brother was actually a mechanic at Ford, and I was freshly out of high school and I was planning on being a chef. My dad got a little busy. He asked my brother to quit his job as a mechanic, go work with him. I started working with my father on the weekends because he figured it'd be better for me to work with him than wash cars, which was what I was doing at the time, to make some extra money. And I kind of just stayed there. And then a guy came in one day and wanted some barbecue tanks delivered to his hotel in South Beach, which no one really did that. And long story short, I took a leap of faith, and that eventually turned into a business. And I was trying to make it my own business, paperwork-wise. And I made some mistakes there, which I know you've read about. And I teach the readers, you know, hopefully to try to avoid some of those mistakes.
It was fascinating for me to read it because there were so many different turning points where you did make a mistake or there was a success. It didn't come easily to you, and you were definitely learning as you went. And I think that was one of the things I really appreciated about the book. And as I work with clients and I do the show, it's all about education. It's trying to help people proactively from making some of these mistakes. So I hope you don't mind if we do talk about some of them, because I do think people can really learn from them. This one particular example of the business structure, right? Of creating a new business within the existing versus a separate business. Can we talk about that for a minute? Can you rewind about what you did and then what you would have done differently?
Sure, absolutely. So when I had my business concept, you know, I made a delivery to this gentleman, I made some money, and, you know, I went home, I said, oh, I have this idea with my girlfriend. And I shared that with my girlfriend, and she says, you know, make a business card and go into business for yourself. So I say, okay, I'm going to do that. That's all I knew, right? Like, business card and how to make a transaction. I'll give you this, you give me some money. So when I started researching and speaking to friends and family, I've heard that I could do a DBA, have a DBA of my father's business, which was, we call it local propane in the book. And if I did so, I could essentially piggyback off of his insurance and corporate structure and have a free trial attempt at running my own business without doing all the legwork. So the mistake there was, by doing so, I'm giving them ownership of my business. So it was never really my business. It was their business doing business. The DBA is doing business as. That's what it stands for. So it was my company doing business as their company. So yeah, it helped me not spend any money, but I also gave away my company in the process.
In the beginning, it was a way to get synergy from costs and save money, and it was easy. And I'm sure many companies have done that where they've started something new within an existing entity. And then all of a sudden, that new startup, right, within the enterprise is all of a sudden doing so much better. And that's what happened with you. Can you flash forward and talk a little bit about what happened and the dynamics with your family when you wanted to split out? What happened there?
Sure. So, and to your point, no one does all the correct paperwork. Not, I shouldn't say no one does. Very few people do all the correct paperwork when they're starting out, because there's nothing to fight about. There's no money. We haven't done anything. It's just an idea. But good ideas and good businesses quickly become valuable. And then when you want to rewind the tape and say, hey, by the way, you know, give me that paper saying that I own this place. Well, now that there's, you know, maybe millions of dollars on the table, people are not going to be so willing to, you know, maybe sign over the business. So something to keep in mind, just always do the right thing from the beginning, from the onset. So the challenges were essentially my little business ideas quickly became extremely profitable, very, very profitable. And again, I didn't own my business. They owned my business. And we had an agreement, you know, like, let's say a handshake agreement, but it really didn't really work out too well, primarily because I didn't have my paperwork in order. And also I was dealing with a sibling and family. And in my experience, and I've seen in many other people's experience, when you work with family, there's not a lot of respect. You know, it's like, oh, it's Laurie, who cares? You know, no, it's a big deal. Oh, it's Max, you know, whatever, he'll get over it. You know, you usually don't find that in business when you're the owner and they're your employees, or, you know, vice versa. People usually have a little bit more respect. And I don't know, it was just in our dynamic, you know, I'm the younger brother too, right? I'm the youngest of three brothers. And having a good idea and making a lot of money, making more money than the rest of my entire family, and then being in a position where it was my brother, had control over me. It's a big brother, you know, it's like getting your brother in a headlock and giving him a noogie. Well, that's kind of like what he did to me, but a lot worse, unfortunately. But it was a good learning experience. Didn't feel like a good teachable moment when I was going through that process, as you know. But if looking back on it today, and even a few years ago, it was great, you know, because that's how you learn. These are part of life's lessons. I even mentioned to a buddy of mine the other day, we were talking about it. I said, you know what, there wouldn't even be a book if I didn't go through all those things, right? So you got to be thankful, you know, effective blaming, they call it.
I think you are humbly summarizing for our audience, because this particular chapter, it could have been a very explosive chapter in the way that you handled it. I think now that you were able to look back with a certain forgiveness towards your brother that at the time I'm sure was very, very difficult. We should probably share just a little bit more about this story for everyone, but I do want everyone to read the book. So this is not going to be a replacement of go get this book. It's definitely worth a read. Can you share a little bit about what happened specifically towards the end of that situation with you and your brother?
Well, I'll provide some color and then tell you what happened towards the end. So essentially what he was able to do with control of the business was lock me out of my own business, right? And when I say lock me out of my own business, I mean literally lock me out of my own business. He hired a armed security guard to keep me off the premises and, you know, stopped paying me my salary, cut my medical, cell phone. I mean, there was a lot of things that were done that I think most people would have, you know, I don't know, run them over with their car or something. I definitely had thoughts during that time. I'll tell you that at that time, it was extremely challenging for me to navigate through that. But that's essentially what he did. He basically took over the business and locked me out of it. And at that time, I already had maybe 40 or so employees. So it was already a pretty good sized business.
This episode is sponsored by the best-selling book, The Business Transition Handbook, How to Avoid Succession Pitfalls and Create Valuable Exit Options. Business owners will learn how to navigate the emotional and practical nature of the transition process to avoid exit regrets. It's crucial to start planning when time is on your side so you don't leave money or your happiness on the table. Reading this book, you'll have Laurie Barkman, the Business Transition Sherpa, guiding you along the way. To download a free copy, head to thebusinesstransitionhandbook.com. That's thebusinesstransitionhandbook.com today.
So the forgiveness part. I think Tony Robbins and going to Date with Destiny and all that really, really assisted me in that part of my life, because I did my best to try to control my anger and like see positive. But when you're getting kicked while you're down, it's very difficult to do that. But my faith also, you know, I went to during my sabbatical that I was locked out of my business for 14 months. I went to Israel. I was baptized in the Jordan River, which was amazing. And I like what a profound experience that was. I think those moments really helped me and kept me at peace. And also having the ability to retaliate and not retaliating, I think to me showed it, I was proving to myself that I was more powerful And like the things that were being done to me, it was like nothing. Like, okay, yeah, brush it under the rug, not a big deal. Because yeah, anyone could have acted out. Anyone could have done something, you know, potentially dangerous or stupid. And by kind of like resisting that and focusing my energy elsewhere, you know, energy goes where, you know, where your focus goes. You feel what you focus on is a saying that I love too.
That's a great saying. There's an underlying piece of this story, which is about you creating value. You determined through blood, sweat, and tears how to build this business. What was initially this startup, which became much, much bigger company than the original propane business. And there were some key aspects to the growth and value creation. And I wanted to dive in on a few. Which ones stand out to you the most?
Culture. Culture of the business is something that my whole journey leading up to that, which was probably 12 years into running the business, I never really thought about culture. You know, that word, I probably didn't even know the definition of culture, you know, 10, 12 years in. And when I studied with Keith Cunningham, who is, the book that Robert Kiyosaki writes, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yes.
The rich dad is modeled after Keith Cunningham. Robert Kiyosaki didn't really have a rich dad. It was Keith Cunningham who's the rich dad. He studied with him. And when he wrote his book, he modeled his rich dad after Keith Cunningham. So I studied with Keith Cunningham as well. And when I learned everything that Keith had to teach on that subject and many other subjects, I tested it, you know, I tested the water. So I was like, okay, you know, he's basically saying that you need to put your employees before your customers and create a good environment for them, make them happy. And then once that's taken care of, then we start focusing on customers. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. If they're happy and you have the right players on the team, they're going to do a great job for you. They're going to keep your customers happy. And if you have, for example, if we had Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez and Mark McGwire in their heyday, all on the same team, are they going to hit home runs? Absolutely, they're going to hit home runs, right? But and then what's another element to that is keeping them happy, right? They're going to want their drinks and their nice cleats and uniforms and things like that, which a lot of companies, especially my company at the time, prior to studying with Keith, I didn't focus on that. I gave them the cheapest shirt I could give them, the cheapest pants. You know, everything was like the cheapest, whatever we can get away with, bare minimum. Oh, we're giving away pens. Perfect. Get the cheapest pens and scribble our name on it. You know, like it just sucked. And then when I started thinking about, you know, if you don't like it, chances are the people you're trying to impress are not going to like it. And if you wouldn't like it as an employee, guess what? Your employees are probably not going to like what you're giving them also. So changing that focus and really walking in through the doors every single day, I'm like, how can I make this place a better environment, a better place to work? The key was asking the employees, hey guys, what, you know, like one of the first things was the vending machines, which I know you read about. It was the coolest thing. It was like pretty much the first thing I ever tested. I got a meeting together. Hey everybody, I want to talk about, you know, the company. I want to know what you think could make this a better place, you know, to work. And people started saying all kinds of things, but one thing kept coming off more than others. Vending machine, vending machine, vending machine. It's like, vending machine. Wow. I mean, how hard is that? Okay, get a vending. I told my manager, hey, get a vending machine. Put it back there in the corner. What do you guys want? Oh, soda, this, that. Okay, great. Put it there. Screaming, cheering. Yeah. It was like, they were so I've never seen that happen. I've never seen the employees that happy. I was like, they're so happy about a freaking vending machine. Like, this is bizarre, you know, but no one had ever listened to their request before. I had never walked back there and said, what do you guys want? Right. And as an exercise, I became very good at that. And I ended up creating a beautiful culture by the time I sold the business. But just using that as a skill and taking like a survey of what the employees need or want. And it went for everything, the clothes that we wore, the paper that we used, everything. I got everybody involved. And when we were all involved, it was just like this energy, you know, anything that got in our way, like we just bulldozed through it. It was so beautiful to see that like transpire. It was incredible. So I think creating a culture and asking your team questions, the right questions, and then giving them what they want is a huge part of business.
One of the other things that struck me in your book was your goal setting, your ability to focus on what it is you wanted to achieve and why. And there's three questions that you kind of run throughout the book. What do you want? Why do you want it? And what are some of the things you can do to get what you want? How did you come up with the idea to draw out your goals and frame it that way?
You know, I initially started that exercise way early on, like when I started the business, without really knowing what I was doing. I just had a paper and I remember one of the first things I wrote down was I wanted $3 million of properties free and clear. I wanted a pickup truck and I wanted a house. Like those are my goals, and I taped them on the back of my door in my home, in my efficiency, I should say. That's where I lived. I lived in efficiency. Taped it on the back of my efficiency. And I remember when I was pulling that off the door, when I was moving into a paid off house that I bought cash. And I had like $5 million in properties paid off at that time. And obviously I had my nice truck. And I said, man, this is crazy. Everything I wrote and I put up here, it's here. Like, this is kind of nuts. So I kind of like took note of that. And I was like, you know, I should probably continue doing papers like this. And then I kind of fell back, you know, back in my mind. When I got into reading Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, that's when I took it to another level. That's like, he gives like very precise, you know, exercises, you know, recite it day and night, put it, you know, write the check, put it on your, tape it on your wall. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, I've done something like this before. This is cool. And, you know, it's stuck with me ever since. And then with Tony Robbins, we did vision boards. And that was really cool as well, to just have everything that you want, like pictures, you know. This was even better than just scribbling it on a paper. So I would say that it's something that I've just started without really knowing what I was doing. And then, you know, Napoleon Hill and Tony helped like cement it in for me.
Yeah. Tell me about the 37 million. How did you come up with that goal?
So that I didn't come up with. It was something that I did not come up with. I came up with 25 million. I thought 25 million was like an astronomical number, you know, when I was thinking about what I could do to make my company worth a crazy number. It was actually in Date with Destiny. And I said, 25 million, that's a crazy number. That's what I want it to be. You know, what I'm going to sell it for. And of course, everyone scoffed at that. They're like, $25 million, you got your freaking mind. And, you know, fast forward maybe a year and a half later, I was on a phone call with a gentleman that I knew, and told me that, yeah, your company's worth 25 million. And when he said that, I'll never forget, I was in my room, I had the phone to my ear, and I was like, didn't even think. I just was looking, and I looked, oh, there's my board, walked over to my board, wiped off 25, grabbed the Expo marker, and just put 37. It just came to me.
I'm trying to remember, was there a significance or just literally came to you?
No, just literally came,
just to, came to you. What's interesting about that part of the story, which is a lot of business owners don't know what their company is worth. Like I'm going to generalize and say 90%. They might guess, they might have an idea, but they don't know. What I thought was interesting is that you wanted to know, right? So the person you called was a professional, right? It was somebody, a tax accountant, or was an accountant, or was a valuations person. It was somebody that had some knowledge that you could at least say, yeah, you know what? I trust their opinion here. And I'm going to get educated on what and 25 million was the number. So many business owners don't do that. Why do you think that is?
They're probably just not aware that that's important. So let me put it to you this way. A lot of people, you ask them, hey, what's your dream, right? And let's say, for example, there's a good percentage of people who say, I want to win the lottery. Great dream. I want to win the lottery. How much is it? Oh, it's $150 million. Okay. Wow. That'd be incredible, man. I hope you win. What they don't do is think, what do I actually need to live the life that I want to live? Like, what do I actually need, right? If you want to fly around on a jet all day long, you don't actually have to buy a $50 million jet. You could get a membership and pay $100,000 a year, right? There's just a lot of ways to achieving what you want without just throwing an astronomical number. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to just way overshoot this number so that I know I'm going to be safe enough. Well, hold on. Maybe you could have reached your goal 10 years back if you would have just tailored your life a little bit better, which is what I was doing when I said I wanted my property, my free and clear properties. I did that because I said, okay, I want to make $100,000 a year at one point. That was my goal. I want to make $100,000 a year. That's going to be my retirement. I don't have to work anymore if I make $100,000 a year. That was my thought process at the time. And that's the goal that I wanted, because I said, okay, all I need is my truck. My house is going to be paid off. Like, what else do you need? I could travel if I have $100,000 a year, right? Like, I have no expenses. Like, that's pretty good money. I don't need to hit the Powerball to do that, right? So I think a lot of owners, maybe they don't have the business acumen, but also they don't have the awareness, the level of awareness of like, what exactly am I doing here? You know, one of the lines I love to use when I was going to work is, be like, look, this is not a nonprofit organization. We're here to make money. If I'm not making money, there's no point in me being here. I'd rather be somewhere else, right? So I think just having what you want, if you know what you want, it's going to be a lot easier to obtain. And I think as a business owner, especially in my case, I said, okay, like that number, the 25 million to me was, okay, something crazy, right? But then once I made the company worth that, with, I backed into the question, to the goal. So I said, okay, 25 million, how many customers does a $25 million business have? How much profit does it have, right? What does it look like? Do they have audited and reviewed financial statements? Do I need that? Do I not need that? And I just went discovering, what are the things that I need to make that happen? And then I did that. And once I did it, and then I had someone tell me, yeah, you did it, it's worth 25 million. And I said, wow, this is too easy. That was too easy. I could have been working for another 20 years and not known it was worth 25 million, right? Because I could just stayed working. But getting the answers to the question, it's like, the recipe, the ingredients for making a cake. What do I need? I need sugar, I need flour, I need water, I need some eggs. Get those things first and then go make the cake. Don't just say like, man, I really want cake. Okay, well, what do you need to make cake? I don't know, right? That's kind of like how a lot of people, you know, approach it, which is so funny.
Yeah, they're guessing. And that's what I loved about your story is you got there and beyond, and you took the time to get educated. You were learning as you went, right? This was your first business that you were growing and eventually sold it. But we don't have all the answers when we're doing that, right? We don't know how it's going to turn out. But I like to see the curiosity that you had, and also how to make things better. And your example with the employees is a great example. Just asking them, right? And then asking different professionals who could help you and understand what is it that I need to do to get to this place, and then work backwards from there. So let's talk about ultimately the sale and the sale process. If I recall correctly, you ran the process yourself. What did it entail? What were things that were painful? What worked well?
So it was very similar to the rest of my journey, which was at first, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. This is scary. You know, how do I do this, right? Everything has been like that. Every step of the journey is like, when you get to that next step, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. Well, when you switch it to, what do I need to know? Who do I need to talk to? Whose advice do I need to get? What do I need to learn? Who do I need to learn from? Then it gets a lot easier. With a couple of phone calls, you already start to, that level of anxiety starts to taper off, and you start getting, okay, well, I might be able to handle this, right? So first thing I did was what I was told to do by a couple of people. Get yourself a, what are these companies called? Basically a broker. Broker is going to sell your business. They have experience. Call them. I called these guys. And what I found with the two gentlemen that I spoke to, which they were very nice people, by the way, A, they didn't believe my company was worth what I was told it was already worth by a business development professional in the space who could possibly buy my business. They didn't believe it was worth that much. B, I found myself educating them on every single piece of the business. And I was like, well, shit, how are you going to sell it if you don't know anything, right? And lastly, I would have to pay them 2% of the sale. And when I did the math, it was like $875,000 or something. I said, hold on a second. That's three strikes. you know, I got to educate you. You don't believe in it like I do. And then I'm going to have to pay you. I said, you know what? Maybe this is something that I could do myself. I've done a lot of other things myself. Why not add another one to the list? So I approached that, you know, with the knowledge I had. And then I started talking to people in the industry, people that were in business development. I asked them questions. Hey, what do you look for? And it's funny because one of the things I did, one of the biggest companies in the country, I asked the guy, I reached out to him on LinkedIn, cold call, like email. Hey, man, I own this company. I'm looking into buying other small companies. I'm curious, what are the things that you look for when you're trying to buy companies? The guy's like, I'll send you everything I look for. It was, I mean, I printed it out. It was like crazy. It was like reading material. It's like a book. I couldn't believe it. The guy said, I'll email it to you. He emailed it to me. I said, well, here's all the stuff that they're looking at. So now that I say, okay, this is what they're looking at, let me make sure mine's bulletproof. So when I go sell, right, these are just little tactics that I use to sharpen my business, to make it better, more presentable. And then going forward, I started, you know, there was a lot of people who wanted to buy my business because it got big real quick and it continued to grow. And then I'd use the process of elimination, which who's the best buyer for my business, which I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people waste time in this area because they're not thinking who is the most qualified person to buy. Oh, for example, I have a buddy of mine who's got an airline business and he's like, a bunch of people want to buy it. I said, who can buy it cash? Oh, cash? I said, yeah, who could buy it cash? You want to eliminate half that list right now? Who could buy it cash? Oh, there's probably only four or five people. Okay. It's almost the same in every case, right? It's like, oh, there's only a handful. Okay, great. Who is it most valuable to? It's a great question. Who is it most valuable to? Out of the people that are left, who's it most valuable to? Okay. Yeah, that's another good way to save yourself a lot of time and energy. And then another tactic that I used was when I bought out a small competitor early on in the book, I said, you know, buying him, there's a lot of economies of scale for me. It's a lot of synergies I'm going to benefit from, which are not part of the sale paperwork, right? Nowhere does it mention, man, Max, you're going to make an extra $500,000 because you don't have to add all this extra equipment and employees. It's not on there, but it's true. So I said, okay, why don't I use that as part of my sale tactic to these big companies? Say, hey, listen, you're not going to pay all this insurance. You're not going to need all these employees. You're not going to need all this equipment. If we add that up, how much extra money is that going to be in your pocket apart from this P&L, which I don't write that part in the book, but it was a huge number. It was a huge number. It's very attractive. And they were salivating when they saw that, like, oh my God, he's right. Cause it's factual. Nothing was pie in the sky. I don't believe in pie in the sky, and I'm not going to say anything that's not a fact, right? Especially when you're in a negotiation. So using that and the fact that it's not even debatable, it's a fact. They're like, well, yeah, we're going to make, for example, like, I can't remember the numbers right now off the top of my head, but let's say I was making $3.2 million a year. I illustrated to them that they can make closer to seven because they're not going to have any of the expenses that I have. And they're going to have all the economies of scale. So, you know, that's extremely attractive. So my asking price now doesn't even look that bad anymore, right? It's like, well, shit, we're going to make double what he's making. So that was another tactic that I used. It worked out extremely well.
That's fantastic. Let's start to wind down. I know you have a lot of favorite quotes, things that inspire you. And I found the book very inspiring. But if there's one that stands out that you want to share, what would it be to, if you're talking to an entrepreneur, and what's one thing that you'd like to share, whether it's a favorite quote, something from your experience?
The one that I really like is, not now does not mean not ever. I wrote that in one of the reflections of the book, and it just meant a lot to me because, you know, a lot of times when you're starting out, when you're embarking on something, you know, it's very easy to feel defeated. It's extremely easy to get discouraged. And even when you're doing everything right, doesn't mean that you're going to get rewarded in that instance. You might not get rewarded for another 10 years. You know, we don't know, but that doesn't mean you should give up. It doesn't mean you should give up. It doesn't mean that you should quit. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to win someday. Is that going to be today? Maybe, maybe not. Could be next week. Could be next month. Could be 3 years from now. But just because you're not winning right now doesn't mean you're not ever going to win.
I love it. Thank you. Max, if people want to stay in touch with you and learn more, what's a good way to do that?
I'm pretty active on Instagram, and you could email me max@whoismaxlewis.com. Pretty easy to find.
Awesome. Awesome. Max, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your story and talking about the book and your experience. I really appreciate you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on. It's great to see you again.
It's great to see you. And to our listeners, be sure to follow Succession Stories in your favorite podcast player and on YouTube, and leave us a review. 5 stars helps the show get discovered. To learn more about maximizing the value of your business and planning your transition, sign up for our newsletter and book a complimentary call with me at thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com. Join me next time on Succession Stories for more insights from transition to transaction. I hope that today's episode resonated with you. What actions will you take as a result? If you want to grow, sell, or transition your business, our strategic transition planning process provides clarity and objectivity on the big questions that may be weighing on your mind. Make an intention and take the next step. Set up a complimentary consultation with me to discuss your goals at thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com. That's thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com.